Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Welcome to Good Vibes, Bad Vibes Talk Radio Show with hosts Gay Hilton and George Juhas. This riveting show will help you find balance and energy while guiding you on your vibrational journey. Now here are your hosts, Drs. Gay Hilton and George Juhas.
And we welcome you, our global audience, today to Good Vibes, Bad Vibes. Our show peers into the world of vibration. Realize the food we eat, the water we drink, and the environment which surrounds us all affects our body's vibration. Before I send you over to Dr. George, I would like to send out a message to any and all people that may have a product or an interest in coming on as a speaker and possibly a sponsor to perpetuate our show. And if you are so interested, please contact either Dr. George or Dr. Gay via our websites or our phone numbers, and we'll be glad to talk with you and possibly get you scheduled in. I would like to introduce next my co-host, Dr. George Juhas, who is a naturopathic doctor and also a clinical hypnotherapist. And George will be introducing today's guest. Hi, George.
Hi, Gay. Thanks very much. And welcome, everyone. It's good to have you with us today. Our guest today is Joseph Houseel, and you're in for a real treat. Joseph is Executive Director of Core of Culture Dance Preservation. It's an organization committed to safeguarding intangible world heritage with an emphasis on ancient dance and endangered movement traditions in the meditation, healing, and martial arts. He is the former artistic director of Parnassus Dance Theater in Kyoto, Japan, and has also worked as artistic director for R&B singer Chaka Khan. Yes. Joseph received a 2000 Emmy Award and nomination for his PBS program on Kabuki Dance, Ancient Elegance. Welcome, Joseph.
Hi, it's really nice to be here, George. Thank you very much for having me.
You're most welcome. And it's just great to have you here. Joseph, tell us more about your work with Core of Culture, and maybe you can also comment on what is the difference between our concept of dance here in the States and that of other cultures?
I will admit that those are both two big questions. But, you know, if I may, I just want to maybe do a disarming hello to your listeners, because I'm thinking, I was listening to this wonderful introduction by Gay, and this wonderful introduction by you about what the show really is about. And it made me think that, you know, one time I was asked to give a talk along these same lines at the Art Institute of Chicago, which was doing a Himalayan art show. And in Himalayan art, you'll frequently see people in meditation postures and in dancing sequences. And so I was asked to come and address these art lovers, basically. Hmm. And so I went there, got the audience, and I looked, the audience was petrified. They were absolutely petrified. So I sort of departed from the planned script, and I just said, now how many people here dance in their underwear in front of the mirror when they're alone?
A great question.
They all broke out, and they all knew it, and I said, okay, now we can start. Everybody's got a body. So I think, you know, as we start talking about ancient dancing and vibrations, I think it's important to remember this isn't a subject that's far away from people. This is a subject about the powers of the human body and appreciation for what it can do in terms of movement traditions, and everybody really deep down does understand that. So I just thought I'd throw that out as a little bit of an introduction to some of your listeners.
Oh, that's terrific, Joseph. And along those lines, you know, rather than any of us living, maybe we can call it a secondhand life as an experiential voyeur, what can we do as non-professional dancers in our lives to increase and harmonize our own vibrational energy?
Well, it's interesting. I think exposure and awareness, you can start at the most basic level. You know, when I heard you read off my credits there and your emphasis on Chaka Khan, it sort of struck me in a different way. And I thought, you know, this is a strange mix of things. But relative to this show, and I've never said this before to anybody, so it's a expose on your show.
We have an exclusive.
You have an exclusive, okay.
A first.
And it's this, you know, when I was about 13 years old is when I first started dancing. And for some reason, Chaka Khan's voice made me dance. And I danced to her voice, not necessarily the song or the rhythm, to her voice very much. And it was actually her voice that sort of released my artist as a dancer. And I used one of her songs to get my first professional job in Washington, D.C. And, you know, when I years later, when I was working for her, and I told her this story, she just said, "Do you know how many stories like that I've heard?" Well, I can believe it. But I think even that was this issue of each of us has something we resonate to. And I think that is a given. We are molecular beings that work and live in a context of all kinds of natural forces, ourselves being participants in it. And certainly we prefer a sunrise over a sunset, or we prefer to walk, or we prefer to lift weights. There are propensities and there are resonances that I think every individual person can begin by saying, well, really acknowledging, and what are those? What do I really resonate with? And not just think about it in more, do I like doing it? Is it fun? But where do I really resonate? And I think that is a starter question that people can take in their daily lives that will begin to enrich what they're doing at a more energetic level.
Interesting. Joseph, one of the interesting things you just brought up, which I equate to very much so, is the resonance. There are certain sounds of music that make us motivated to move. And each of us, of course, have different forms of music that interests us more than others, especially with dance. One of my favorites, and you may like this too, is Sister Sledge's The Dancer, you know, disco song. I can't remember the exact title of it right now, but it was a big hit in the disco realm.
Well, they only had one. Family? They only had one hit. We Are Family. I'm sure.
Well,
that was their hit. Yeah.
Yeah. But there was the disco dancer one too, and I can't think of the name of it. But when I hear that, I just have to get up and get moving. And I think what you're trying to say is when we hear that resonance of that sound of that music that makes us feel good, see, it raises our vibration. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's interesting. For me, I think it is even, it's less self-conscious as possible is, I think, a good place to be. So even if you're persuaded by something or that an impulse or a rhythm captivates you, I think even before you realize how you feel about it, you're already connected with it. So there's a kind of a basic understanding. I wanted to share the one prepared thing I brought today when I was doing my homework for this show was a statement by Lam Govinda, who was a German in the early part of the 20th century, who became revered as a lama in the Himalayas for his own enlightenment capacities. But he wrote a good deal about the state of primitive man. Now, whether primitive man is something inside all of us at a deeper meta level, or whether it's something we project onto the far distant historical past, it's worthwhile thinking, what was that being's relationship with his environment in terms of how he connected and what his brain and body was for? And Lam Govinda wrote this, and I thought it was quite good. But all the more was primitive man conscious of life, and all the more he took part in the life around him. If he was more concerned with his bodily existence, then it must be said that his body extended far more into the universe than we can imagine. He experienced bodily what we conceive theoretically, the forces of nature which in our minds have degenerated into mere abstractions were to him bodily realities. And I think, you know, gravity itself is a great example of that. Gravity is not a concept. Gravity is a force. And actually, if you balance, gravity will hold you up. So that's a place for people in the simplest sense. Are you feeling gravity? Because gravity is a vibrational energy. And are you feeling it, or are you thinking it and then acting upon your thoughts? So even these, you know, jumps from understanding what a primordial understanding to our more contemporary lifestyle understanding might be are sometimes good ways to stimulate understanding.
I just remembered the name of the song. He's the Greatest Dancer by Sister Sledge. That's the one that gets me rocking.
Okay.
But, you know, that's such a wonderful explanation that you just gave.
Mm.
And do you think we've heard these so-called research studies where heavy metal music, for example, has a very negative effect on the body's vibration as opposed to classical music, which enhances learning and mental capacities. And, of course, dancing activates the body's physiology, and I think anybody that dances will admit that you feel so much better when you dance. But could you talk a little bit more about the creativity that the vibration of dance maybe activates within the physiology as well as the consciousness?
Well, that's a really good question. But first, a plug for our heavy metal listeners. I like heavy metal music, and I think, you know, you're saying, it's always who did the test. Because I'll tell you, if you're a 15-year-old white boy, you can relate to heavy metal music, and it is what you are about. It is a really natural connection, and there's a part of the world that really does relate and finds wholesome resonance in where they're at in heavy metal music, and there's some also great musicians there, too. But I understand what you're talking about. And so I'm going to go for your question of creativity, and you've almost partly answered it. Now, George and I met in Bhutan, which is a Himalayan kingdom where Core of Culture, our organization, has been on a 5-year project working with the Honolulu Academy of Arts under the directorship of Stephen Little, where we've been doing expeditionary work in documenting the ancient dances there. And George, I think you'll admit it's a pretty extraordinary dance culture they have in Bhutan.
Extraordinary indeed, Joseph. Just absolutely mesmerizing. And from a creative standpoint, I can't help but feel that observing those dances, it's really about expressing the individual's experience of the music and the movement, and the movement being or affecting a kinesthetic transformation of the emotional and physical energy of the music as it and the movement as it reverberates through the body.
I hope you wrote that down. That was really spot on. But I also think that you're tapping into the best place we can come from to try to understand what they're doing based on the cultural ammo that we have in being able to understand what they're doing. You know, Gay's question was about creativity. And one of the points I was going to make, but I'm so fascinated by your observation on the individual experience of the dancer themselves, and I think you'd agree on the observer of that kind of dancing by the monks in Bhutan,
yes.
Is that in our culture we don't have traditions of sacred dancing. And we don't have traditions of dance that are handed down from generation to generation to generation that last for 10 hours a day for 3 days in a row. And so for us in our culture to try to find what that dance might be doing for them is a creative act for us. It's not a traditional act for us. It's a creative act for us. Much like this radio station and network is a very creative act to try to respond to something that might be missing in contemporary society. As we try to understand, wow, is there more to movement than dancing as we understand it? That's a creative jump to go see if you can find it, to go see if you can feel it. You know, go beyond the thrill of the disco dance to say the questions Gay is asking. What's happening here? What is this doing to my mood? What is this doing to my metabolism? Where is this going in a wholesome way, not just a diverting way?
And, you know, Joseph, I think you made a very good point, and I'm glad you brought this up, that to a 15-year-old, heavy metal rocks his world. And to someone else that might be into the classicals, heavy metal would be
to a master's student at an East Coast university.
That's
doing
right.
Doing the program and making up the survey, you know.
It's just like anything else in life.
Yeah.
Everybody has something else that trips their trigger. And with that in mind, we have to realize, thank God, we're all diverse.
Well, I think, too, on, you know, the understandings in tantric Buddhism, our understandings that embrace really all levels of existence without labeling them good or bad simply for what they are. And that's something maybe we can talk about when we come back.
That's right. We're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back with our guest, Joseph Halseal, and this has been an interesting informational bit on dancing and vibration. We'll see you in a few.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you aware that we are all vibrational beings? Where does our personal energy come from? How does energy manifest in our lives? What are the ways we can use different energies to change and improve the quality of our lives? Learn how you can answer these questions and more. Traditional naturopathic doctors Gay Hilton and George Juhas bring a dynamic, interactive presentation style to any engagement that is certain to educate, entertain, and inspire you. Call us today to schedule an intoxicating, riveting seminar, workshop, or lecture. To reach Dr. Gay, please call 814-333-6126 or by email at drhilton@acu-nu.com. Dr. Gay's website is www.acu-nu.com. To reach Dr. George, please call 724-413-6252 or email him at guhas@hotmail.com. Dr. George's website is www.uhaswellness.com. Call today and experience the individual energy being that is you.
Blending the practical and the mystical, The Emmy Louie Show, with host and one of the feng shui architecture's leading experts, Emmy Louie is an honest, fun, and entertaining look at exciting fields of feng shui, architecture, and even politics. Each week, Emmy and her expert guests, including the biggest names and trendsetters in these industries and cutting-edge experts in green and sustainable practices, offer advice on how to make the best of your home or office, your environment, and your mind, body, and spirit. Tune in to The Emmy Louie Show each Tuesday at 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Eastern on the 7th Wave Network and get that spark that'll change your life. The Emmy Louie Show. Understand your physical space and activate your energy.
Be extraordinary. 7th Wave Network.
Welcome back to Good Vibes, Bad Vibes with naturopathic practitioners, Drs. Hilton and Juhas. If you have a question for either Gay or George, please feel free to email them directly. Gay's email is drhilton@acu-nu.com, and you can reach George at guhas@hotmail.com. Now back to the show.
And we welcome you back to Good Vibes, Bad Vibes with our guest, Joseph Halseal. And Joseph, we left off, and I'm going to let you pick right back up where you had done your last sentence.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate this conversation because I'm listening to the two of you say these very ambitious things and daring things about dancing that you are very heartfelt, where you're we're all searching for the right words to talk about it. And I'm a long time of essayist on dancing, and it's so funny because it's writing about the one thing you can't possibly find words for. You know, so it's sort of an endless exploration of trying to find the right words. And as I hear the two of you speak, it makes me understand more how I've become very comfortable working in the Himalayas, with it to the point where I forget some of these chasms that need to be leapt over in order to just bridge some understanding. And one was talking about, you know, some people like one kind of thing or some people respond to a different kind of thing. But actually, in tantric Buddhism, which is the Buddhism of the dancing, that George and I saw in Bhutan, in which Core of Culture Dance Preservation is working with in Bhutan, tantric Buddhism recognizes all the forces as simply forces, that finally at the end of the day it is bliss and emptiness is the state of enlightenment, but that forces are not bad in a moral sense. They might be wrathful protectors, but they're not evil. And when this dance was first being encountered of the Buddhist monks, it's called cham. It is a meditative style of dancing. In fact, it is a form of yoga that dances called cham. And when this dance was first encountered by the West, they called them devil dances, the devil dances of Darjeeling, the demon dances of Tibet. And people would see the monstrous masked faces and the animal-headed dancers and just think, demons, devils. And so the first experience of Westerners to it was this is all demon dancing. Well, over the decades, slowly, partly by American dance pioneer Ted Shawn, who worked with Ruth St. Denis, one of the early American pioneers in dancing, who encountered these Asian forms of dance in the 1920s, came to see that, no, these are not devils. These are protectors, wrathful protectors. How you'd want a protector is wrathful. And so in this project that Core of Culture is doing with the Honolulu Academy of Arts, a museum where 150 works of Himalayan art will be shown with 8 high-definition digital screens of Buddhist Cham dancing.
That's terrific.
You'll have this ability to see that there is a connection between this power that simply is an elemental power, neither good nor bad, and something that contributes to enlightenment by embracing a fuller truth of reality. And so, as the dance connects with the artwork and the painting, which is one of the splendors of this project and unprecedented aspects, is dance and painting together from a living culture where both are ritual arts, I have to begin my questioning of the art by who is dancing, who are the characters who dance in these paintings, and where, why are they dancing, and where are they dancing? So it turns out the protective deities almost always dance. Animal-headed deities almost always dance. And then to learn that the animal-headed deities come to symbolize the dissolution of the human being at death, to help the human let go of this world and dissolve into the next, in through a phase of being represented by these animal-headed dancers, you realize that there really is a very profound understanding of where that animal-headed dancer is in that painting and where that animal-headed dancer is in this village community where devout people are looking at this throughout their lives.
And it might be important to mention for those in the audience that are not acquainted with Bhutan, it has become a very popular visitation for anybody traveling that wants to go into an area where there's a lot of meditation and spirituality. And I understand it's become quite the haunt for movie stars.
I don't know. George is the biggest movie star I've seen in Bhutan. So we spotted him right away. We said, he is somebody. And isn't that true, though, didn't we, George? We came over and introduced ourselves to you.
That's right. That was in Boomtang, as I recall.
It was in Boomtang, yes,
it was. At the Gonker Guest House.
Absolutely. The food was good there. But yes, I think that what you're getting at, Gay, is more the issue that people have been all over the world looking for the next big thing. And Bhutan is this small country. It's the size of Switzerland. And it's sandwiched between China and India, the two most populated countries in the world. And Bhutan has less than 1 million citizens. And everywhere around it is wildly overpopulated. So there's this little Shangri-La, I'm going to say it, Shangri-La of a country where it's never been occupied ever in its history. It has never been successfully invaded, and it's never been colonized. It's almost impossible to conceive of a place that's never been colonized ever. And so the dance traditions are particularly old in Bhutan and unbroken. And that comes with a double-edged sword. If something is that unbroken and natural and traditional and passed on, you're not always so aware of it or exactly what value it really is. On the other hand, there's one dance, a hereditary dance lama that's an 18-generation line, and that's the conservative estimate of how old his dance lineage is. So Bhutan is this remarkable place that can serve as an example to the rest of the world as the world starts to beat down a door to see it, of how to maintain ancient dance lineages in the world.
And isn't it interesting, too, Joseph, the connection with the spirituality there, the mind, body, and spirit, and the dance?
Gay, you know, that is the one issue, and George, if now I can go back to your earlier question, what's the difference between dance East and West, and why this whole exhibition of uniting dancing and art, which was the vision of Stephen Little, is really so unprecedented. And it is because this is a living culture. Everything that we've seen from Tibet came after Tibet had already been destroyed by China.
Yes.
So we never saw things from Tibet when Tibet was flush. And Bhutan is still a living, thriving culture. And so the art that we're showing is all used. It's all from temples. And the dancing really is sacred dancing. So we're bringing over items, and as you say, the spiritual element, Gay, that's their life.
Exactly.
That's their life. And so it's hard for us to say, wow, we're showing this in a museum, but this is completely it's completely about their spirituality.
Now I want to ask a question of both of you who were in Bhutan, and someday I hope to visit. Did you, I would imagine, Joseph, in a second, you would answer this yes. George, you also, did you notice a feeling of well-being while you were experiencing this dancing and watching all this and being a part of it?
Absolutely. Just a feeling of calm and peace and relaxation. But yet, I can't underestimate also the aspect of surprise as a key element in the dance. And this was spontaneous, both in terms of the action of the dancers as well as the interpretation, my own interpretation of what was occurring in the moment.
Well, I think that's a really fair observation, George, because the dancing in Bhutan is archaic, and it's abrupt, and it's coarse, and it's rough, and some of it's incredibly pyrotechnic in a very bucolic way. And it's startling to watch. And one of the steps that you'll see in Buddhist Cham, in another part of the Himalayas, particularly in Ladakh, they use the word stumble, that the deities have to stumble into this clumsy world of ours. So even if the deity makes an appearance in this world, it's clumsy for the deity to do because he's not in the deity's world. And so I think there is a quality of roughness to these dances and really raw power in these dances too. But Gay, in answer to your question, you've called me out. Actually, I am so paternal. I make sure my cameramen are okay. Everybody's got food. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's getting enough sleep. The dances are okay. And my job is to really study the dances and take field notes on them. So what makes me feel happy is if I look at a dance and go, there's another generation that's got this one. And then I go to another dance. The dance might be great, but go like, whoa, nobody knows this dance. Okay? Or only half the people, or the one guy who knows it just died, you know? So my reaction is very much one of on the job. And it's what I have some sort of radar eyes to be able to understand. And so when I'm watching and I'm looking to see where there's a dance ecology and where the dance ecology is healthy.
Very interesting. What can you tell us about working with Chaka Khan? This is probably something everybody that's listening in that realizes you worked with her will want to know.
It was actually
into the light.
Her manager and her sister, Tammy McCrary, and my very good friend Howard McCrary, who introduced me into some of the work here. A lot of it was overall career understanding. And regarding her actual act, it was very enlightening too. Chaka Khan is one of the most talented people I've ever met in any discipline. It is a very natural talent, and it's a constant talent. And she was in a phase of her life where she was at a place where society would normally find you disposable or, you know, repackage you in a way that really isn't quite what you are. And so she was really rethinking what she was doing. And I was involved with her in some shows in Africa. And her backup singers, she usually used three out of five that was a pool. She usually had three of the five in a given show. They'd been with her for years and years and years. And so you can't really walk into that situation, you know, being a white guy and coming and saying you're going to redo. These people know this stuff inside and out. It was very much a learning experience for me. And I was able to bring in some conceptual strength to understanding of where she was in the cultural milieu, tidying up the show a little bit, helping on decisions with lights and sets, and some stuff with the backup dancers. But it was very much an experience of saying, here is someone that is talented, and talent was the way they got where they are, pure talent. And what does the world do with pure talent? So I would say, you know, my experience with Chaka Khan was one of sort of a dream come true. I admire her singing so much. But that it was really an experience of what is a lifelong career dedicated to the arts. It really is one of giving. It is one of giving to people constantly through the gift that you have, which was God-given, And so that was really probably my overriding impression of working with Shaka.
Oh, I would imagine that was quite an experience to behold. We're going to be back in a few with our guest, Joseph Houseel, and more information on the vibration of dance. This has been truly interesting.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you aware that we are all vibrational beings? Where does our personal energy come from? How does energy manifest in our lives? What are the ways we can use different energies to change and improve the quality of our lives? Learn how you can answer these questions and more. Traditional naturopathic doctors Gay Hilton and George Juhas bring a dynamic, interactive presentation style to any engagement that is certain to educate, entertain, and inspire you. Call us today to schedule an intoxicating, riveting seminar, workshop, or lecture. To reach Dr. Gay, please call 814-333-6126 or by email at drhilton@acu-nu.com. Dr. Gay's website is www.acu-nu.com. To reach Dr. George, please call 724-413-6252 or email him at guhas@hotmail.com. Dr. George's website is www.uhaswellness.com. Call today and experience the individual energy being that is you.
Blending the practical and the mystical, The Emmy Louie Show, with host and one of the feng shui architecture's leading experts, Emmy Louie is an honest, fun, and entertaining look at exciting fields of feng shui, architecture, and even politics. Each week, Emmy and her expert guests, including the biggest names and trendsetters in these industries and cutting-edge experts in green and sustainable practices, offer advice on how to make the best of your home or office, your environment, and your mind, body, and spirit. Tune in to The Emmy Louie Show each Tuesday at 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Eastern on the Seventh Wave Network and get that spark that'll change your life. The Emmy Louie Show. Understand your physical space and activate your energy.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist, Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office. Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing, broadcast each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Welcome back to Good Vibes, Bad Vibes with naturopathic practitioners, Drs. Hilton and Juhas. If you have a question for either Gay or George, please feel free to email them directly. Gay's email is drhilton@acu-nu.com, and you can reach George at guhas@hotmail.com. Now back to the show.
And we invite you back to Good Vibes, Bad Vibes with our guest, Joseph Houseel. George, I'm going to let you start it off.
Thank you, Gay, and welcome back, everyone. Joseph, let's continue about with your discussion concerning the concept of dance, not only here in the States, but as it compares in other cultures.
I think it's a good thing to point out, and it's one of the distinctions where it's very real and meaningful to say there's a difference between Eastern and Western culture. Basically, in Western culture, and let's begin with ancient Greece, the ancient Greeks had Greek tragedy. They had dithyrambic mystery. They had mystery cults. They had oracles. They had augurs who speak to birds. They had deities. They had athletes that trained in the nude. They had paean victories to warriors, paean victories to athletes. It was very much a culture of the body and of religious mystery. and cult. Ancient practices that really were full of dancing, the Greeks were a dancing culture, and so were the Romans, both the indigenous culture that was in Italy even when the Etruscans came, and afterwards even when Rome developed and took in some of the agrarian rituals of indigenous Italy into its more cosmopolitan culture. Nevertheless, it was a dancing culture. So we had sacred dancing and mystery dancing and ecstatic dance in the West until the rise of Christianity. And in the 3rd century, really, Christianity gained dominance in Western culture, and specifically in the writings of Thomas Aquinas, a great theologian, but he was very clear to separate the body from the soul. And the body was mortal, and it was sinful, and it was defiled, and it was of the flesh, and the soul was immortal, and the soul was pure, and the soul was undefiled. And so this split happened. Suddenly the body lost the soul. And not unlike the Taliban, dancing was banned in civic law and in church law. Dancing was banned. And you do have to remember this comes out of the decadent Roman Empire, but nevertheless, dancing was banned. And so there was social dancing. There was nothing in terms of public spectacle. Until in the Middle Ages, morality plays grew up, and sometimes at the end of these plays, the devil would appear. Well, the devil was a dancer. And then they had the problem because people would go to the shows just to see the devil, because that was the most interesting part. But what you really had was dance as a metaphor for sin. And then in the Reformation, Descartes comes along and very famously says, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. Not I feel vibrational energy, therefore I am. I think, therefore I am. So the body is separated from the mind.
Right.
So by the time you go through Christianity and the Reformation, the body has lost its soul and the body has lost its mind, and so as ballet develops as an art form, which has gone on to be the most successful dance form in history, it's a theatrical form, and it's not sacred. They go back to the Greek myths, and then they do winter chasing, spring, and they do swans, and they do Sleeping Beauty, but it's entertainment, and it becomes high art and very, very developed like nothing else the world has ever seen, and it speaks by the perfection of its beauty, but it isn't sacred dancing. So the West lost its sacred dancing around the 3rd century, and what we have is a lot of other kinds of dancing that we're really, really good at, and we have this one word for it, dance. And it's sort of our cultural power that makes us go around and say kabuki dance, no dance, stripper dance, hula dance, no dance, monk dance. Well, you know, in Japan there's at least 5 words for dancing. It's sort of like the old Eskimos, they've got 100 words for snow. But yeah, the Tibetans have at least 4 words for dancing. So dancing is more nuanced in understanding, even. So, however, when we try to understand the dance of another culture, we come with our understanding of dance, which is really a limited understanding of all of the powers that human movement can be.
You can even equate that with our talking about separation of body, mind, and even spirit in terms of spiritual. How many concepts do we have of what is being spiritual?
Absolutely. But they few of them have to do with a wholesome appreciation of the human body.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Asia, in the many forms of Hinduism and Taoism and Buddhism, you'll see traditions where the body is understood as the vehicle for transformation. And if you're going to become enlightened or touch the basic energy of the world or understand existence or conceive bliss and emptiness, you do it with your body. Your body is how you do it. And so the body is exalted. In the form of Buddhist dancing we've been working with in Bhutan, His Holiness Drikung Chabdon Chetseng Rinpoche of the Drikung Kagyu Order translated a 12th century manuscript about how to perform this cham. And in it claims, quite frankly, that cham is the apotheosis of mystical attainment. It is the highest form of meditation possible, because you're not just visualizing a deity, you're embodying the deity. And so this kind of appreciation where dance is the most mystical thing you could possibly do, contrasted with how we understand dancing with the stars, we've really got two different notions of what dancing can do. And so one of the things that Core of Culture can really bring to the table by introducing some of these ancient forms of dancing to a more widespread appreciation is it can expand the notion of what dance itself is. And I think people always find some kind of release when they realize the notion they held on to is expanded.
Well, we were just talking to...
Very intriguing, Joseph.
About how when we dance, we are expressing our personality. And that is kind of tapping into the soul. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I think, Gay, you bring up again for me this fact that, you know, if Westerners, Americans, say, or Westerners, Europeans, if they want to taste something of these Asian traditions that are so old and been practiced for centuries and centuries, they really have to sort of step out of their normal shoes, although yoga is getting much more popular, and martial arts are very, very popular, and meditation and Buddhism is certainly growing in the United States. Nevertheless, it takes an act of individual assertion to say, well, you know, I'm going to go explore Buddhism, or, you know, I'm going to take yoga for 10 weeks and just see what happens. And I think this kind of individuality, where you really do look at movement as creative expression, is something that really belongs to the West. I think a lot of Easterners don't have the same kind of notion of creative expression. They understand their identity more collectively.
Right.
And they understand their identity in light of who did it before them and who did it after them. And if you're in a masked dance where the internal teaching of that dance is to swim along with the deity, you've got a situation where you're equally engaged. It's just that the Westerner, I think, is obliged to come from a more creative individual place if they want to taste that same experience. And I think many Asian people, and certainly people in the Himalayas, don't have the same kind of notion of the freedom, the liberty of individual expression in any time. So I think that's one thing they marvel at when they see Westerners come through and work with them.
Well, and the other inkling here of the expansion of the mind through exercise and dance is that as we exercise, we're increasing circulation.
Mm.
If we're looking at this totally from a physiological standpoint, it's very easily understood that brain function, physiological function, everything is improved when you move. But with the paradigm that, as you say, has been consistent in the East, and that being that the mind and the body are one and not separate, to a Westerner, there is this new paradigm. It is actually a very old paradigm, and that is that, yeah, there is something to this mind and body, and that we're not, as Westerners, looking at the mind and body as a separate entity anymore. We're now looking at it as, yes, the mind and the body work together, and here's a great example, dance.
Well, and I think, too, where the Westerner has to come from is kind of a reduction to basics, in that they have to get to the place where mind and body are one, and that's stillness, and that's silence, and that's the practice of meditation, where you experience, that's why they call it practice, you experience these states. You learn how to induce certain states within yourself by various means, by various mental control, by breathing, and in this state, when you finally reach a place of stillness and silence, then your mind and body is one, and that is where you'll feel vibration. So for the Westerner, getting to that place is kind of putting the brakes on normal life and getting to a place where they really can find that unity of mind and body, and also at the same time be in a place where they're ready to receive vibrations, because they're, you might say, not in their own way.
Exactly. They step out of their own way, and they, as many would describe, that have experienced this, nirvana. And as that occurs, the awareness of your body through dance and through any other physical means of exercise and whatnot becomes more paramount.
Mm. I think that's true. I think this idea of increasing awareness is something that goes back to your very first question, you know. How does it apply to daily life? Increasing self-awareness about the body and its rhythms and its capacities, and you might even say its longings. I'm a firm believer that if you need vitamin A, you want spinach. You know, that you're drawn to what you think you need. And I think if people would listen to them, their own bodies more, and find that awareness, which is simply a kind of walking meditation, you might say, it is the start of a lot of good things.
Well, for example, Joseph, and I'm sure you're aware of this, being in the dance arts, drumming has been found to be very therapeutic to the vibration of the body. And certain drumming sounds have been known to decrease blood pressure and enhance health. And, of course, we know that occurs in a lot of dance. There's a lot of drumming in some forms of dance.
Well, that is a really interesting subject, and I hope we can talk about that after the break.
We'll be right back with our guest, Joseph Housefield, and we're talking about dance and the vibration it exudes. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you in a few.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Are you aware that we are all vibrational beings? Where does our personal energy come from? How does energy manifest in our lives? What are the ways we can use different energies to change and improve the quality of our lives? Learn how you can answer these questions and more. Traditional naturopathic doctors Gay Hilton and George Juhas bring a dynamic, interactive presentation style to any engagement that is certain to educate, entertain, and inspire you. Call us today to schedule an intoxicating, riveting seminar, workshop, or lecture. To reach Dr. Gay, please call 814-333-6126 or by email at drhilton@acu-nu.com. Dr. Gay's website is www.acu-nu.com. To reach Dr. George, please call 724-413-6252 or email him at guhas@hotmail.com. Dr. George's website is www.uhaswellness.com. Call today and experience the individual energy being that is you.
Blending the practical and the mystical, The Emmy Louie Show, with host and one of the feng shui architecture's leading experts, Emmy Louie is an honest, fun, and entertaining look at exciting fields of feng shui, architecture, and even politics. Each week, Emmy and her expert guests, including the biggest names and trendsetters in these industries and cutting-edge experts in green and sustainable practices, offer advice on how to make the best of your home or office, your environment, and your mind, body, and spirit. Tune in to The Emmy Louie Show each Tuesday at 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Eastern on the 7th Wave Network, and get that spark that'll change your life. The Emmy Louie Show. Understand your physical space and activate your energy.
Thoughts are things. Mind creates. The quality of your thoughts and feelings impacts everything in your life. So how do you access your power to change? On Theater of the Mind with Kelly Howell, you'll get unprecedented access to some of the world's leading visionaries and consciousness researchers, exploring mind expansion, intuition, creativity, and the many facets of human potential. Expand your knowledge of the body-mind connection and learn how to tap into the other 90% of your potential. Visit Theater of the Mind online at kellyhowell.com. That's KellyHowell.com.
Theater of the Mind is brought to you by BrainSync CDs and MP3 downloads for peak performance and mind expansion. Visit BrainSync.com. That's Brain, SYNC.com.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Welcome back to Good Vibes, Bad Vibes with naturopathic practitioners, Drs. Hilton and Juhas. If you have a question for either Gay or George, please feel free to email them directly. Gay's email is drhilton@acu-nu.com, and you can reach George at guhas@hotmail.com. Now back to the show.
And we welcome you back, and our guest today is Joseph Housefield. And Joseph, I'll let you pick up. We were talking a bit about drumming, and I'm going to let you take it from there.
Well, thank you, Gay. It's interesting, these conversations and both of your questions have stimulated sort of things I haven't thought about or remembered in a while. And you had mentioned, Gay, that there had been studies done to show that different kinds of rhythms and rhythmic drumming affected different kinds of healing modalities in different patients. And I have a story about that that relates to Bhutan and some of our work with Core of Culture. We spent June of 2005 dedicated to bringing a 46-year-old American Parkinson's patient. He was a great athlete when he was younger and got adult-onset Parkinson's disease and agreed to come with us to visit seven different healers, traditional healers, in Bhutan. And all of these healers used drums, different kinds of drums. Some used a hook playing onto a large drum, and others did a drum that swung in their hands and tootled beads, would be the damaru, it's called. But one thing I noticed, because my job was to observe Mike as he experienced these healing sessions. On at least two of these occasions, his Parkinson's palsy began to fall into the rhythm of the drums. So he started out at the session having his Parkinson's shake sort of uncontrolled, and then through the session, his shake became attuned to the drumming. And he had some powerful experiences and certainly left Bhutan much healed from the Parkinson's that he came to Bhutan with.
Joseph, do you think that that the rhythm of the drums acted as a trigger and prompting or igniting Mike into sharing his feeling of pleasure with the sound of the drums?
It's interesting. I'm not sure if it's a pleasure or if it is a kind of entrancement, because there's chanting going on, there's movement going on, there's fire, there's drumming, there's a lot of tension, not tension, there's a lot of attention. So everybody's in quite an awake state in a healing situation like that. And I think it is part of an entire context where the body responds to the entire situation, but the rhythm, I think as you're suggesting, the rhythm guides the body into it. So when the body is released from thinking about itself, it's going to fall into natural rhythms.
And also, the actual drumming they have found to be effective in the chakras. The East Indian chakra energy centers are very much absorbing the drum beat and, you know, kind of balancing to the rhythms as a consequence, as are the acupoints. They've done some studies that I have read concerning various sounds affecting, in particular, the chakra systems. And anybody that studies any of the chakra systems, and I have not been much of an intense student of them, but I do know there are certain vowel sounds that and certain musical sounds that tend to increase the vibration of the chakras or balance them in either case.
Well, there are definitely sounds associated with each chakra. And I just to let our audience know, chakras are a system of energy centers in the human body. So the third eye, sort of between the eyes and then inside, is one of the chakras. There's a chakra above the head. There's a chakra at the heart, a chakra in the belly. So there's seven chakras that run up the spine and center of the body, and they're energy centers. So Gay is talking about these chakras, and this is a very ancient Hindu, even pre-Hindu, concept of an understanding of the body that doesn't look like the arms and legs body we have, but one that you can concentrate to conceive yourself this way. Now, Gay, interestingly, in certain yogic practices, dancers are conceived of as being in the chakras. So there's a dancer in each chakra, and each doing a different dance, and they're each a different color. And so it's a meditation technique. Dancing is not just something external, but actually when visualizations become mature and replaced in the body, and then in a similar way kind of released, you'll find that they actually dance. So placing deities who dance within the body is an Asian technique of some antiquity.
I think I've seen what you're referring to in some ancient, you know, like you'll see some of the pictures of the chakras, and I do recall seeing that. So
mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, it just shows that really that, you know, that dancing is not merely a physical thing. Going back to the Western use of the word dance or inescapability of the use of the word dance, when yoga and Tai Chi were first introduced to the West, yoga was introduced when swamis and guru worship was being introduced around the turn of the century in salons and things like that. It was called yoga dance. And Tai Chi was brought over in various ways through the West Coast, and it was called Tai Chi dancing at first. But it wasn't long before people realized, well, this isn't dancing. There's something else here. And I'd just like to share an interesting insight that was given to me by Lam Setin, who is the Lama who runs Tamjing Monastery in Bhutan, and it is the seat of a 500-year-old dance tradition. And some of these dances are still in very good shape. George has seen them. But I was studying with him, with one of the monks from his monastery, and we were talking about this place where awareness of consciousness and meditation and a sense of the body are united. And then the Lama comes over and said, and it's at this point where the Chinese are interested in energy and the Indians are interested in mind control and the Himalayan Buddhists are interested in the experience of enlightenment. And so where you even break from getting to that place of unity, I thought that was really just wonderful to hear such a tripartite break like that.
Exactly. In other words, they're showing the mind, the body, and the spirit via these external movements and the whole realm of combining them.
Very much so, and I think this goes back to why it's absolutely legitimate for anybody in our culture to try to explore themselves, to try to find out how they can resonate and awaken the forces of their body, which will teach them and calm them and give them power. Because finally, when you get to this place of simple unity, you can go anywhere you want. And that is where in the West we do creative things, and often in Asia we do more traditional things. But both can be, I think, very powerful ways of actualizing human potential and the individual spirit.
Oh, how well put.
Joseph, perhaps what we should all do is just reserve time to simply move around in an unguarded, free, fresh manner and make it a rule to vibrate and have fun doing it, even if it's just for a few minutes a day.
And by God, have a mirror.
Well, you know,
vanity speaks.
Well, today I'll tell you something interesting. When I lived in Japan a long time, and one thing I learned there was your teacher is your mirror.
Yeah,
so your teachers could do everything you did backwards.
Oh, wonderful. Joseph, you've been a great guest. We're certainly going to have you return. And we thank you for being with us today. And George, would you like to take a second to tell us about next week's guest?
Thank you, Gay, and thank you very much, Joseph. A real pleasure. Next week we'll have Dr. Lisa Lawrence, who's going to be talking about nutrition and vibrational energy. I think you'll all find her a very fascinating guest.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week with Good Vibes, Bad Vibes.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's show, Good Vibes, Bad Vibes. Be sure to tune in every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the 7th Wave Network, and discover how you can be empowered in our vibrational world.